Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.
It is on private property, and it is heavily gated and protected.
I just about fell down when I saw it. I couldn't believe it. That's human nature again. You don't discard that which has served you so well for thousands of years.
Missouri is home to more than 150 petroglyphs and pictographs. These are carvings and, in some cases, drawings left by the state's indigenous residents, many of them in caves. And in recent years, scholars have made great strides in understanding the stories they tell. I'm Sarah Fenske. This is St. Louis on the Air. And before we move on, I want to remind you that the biggest source of St. Louis Public Radio's funding comes from listeners like you. Because you value what you hear on St. Louis on the Air, donate today. Go to stlpr.org/donate. That's stlpr.org/donate. Carol Diaz-Granados and Jim Duncan have worked with Osage elders for the past 25 years. They're striving to interpret the meaning behind the pictographs and petroglyphs on sites throughout Missouri, and they join us today to discuss their work. Carol Diaz-Granados is a PhD and a research associate at Washington University's Department of Anthropology. Carol, welcome.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for inviting us.
And we're also joined today by Jim Duncan. He's the former director of the Missouri State Museum and a former exhibits director with the Missouri Department of Conservation, and he has studied the Osage. Jim, welcome.
Hey, thank you.
So, Carol,
thank you for having me.
Carol, I'd like to start with you. Some people might think of these pictures as being somewhat akin to graffiti, but I understand it's much more than that. What makes these pieces of rock art special?
Well, for one thing, what we are seeing in them, in many of them, are symbols that reflect the portable artifacts that are found archaeologically. For example, maces, bilobed arrows, feet. And that's one thing that when we first started our project, we thought they were a separate entity, that the rock art was separate from the artifacts that were being found in the ground, but they're not. They're very, very much connected.
Hmm. Are they using the same symbols or telling the same stories?
No. And then the second thing is that when we find petroglyphs or pictographs that are very complex, they frequently repeat at different sites not only in Missouri, but also around the eastern United States, sometimes even into the western United States, like birth figures. We see birthing figures, birthing babies, so to speak. And I can't swear that they're, you know, babies. They can be supernatural figures, supernatural beings, but the same symbols, the same depictions are repeated. So we know that it's not simple graffiti. They're trying to tell a story or trying to explain an oral tradition.
Hmm. And I want to get to the stories they're telling in just a moment, but first, just a little more context. Jim, do we have a sense of how old these are?
Yeah, we do. Sadly, with most of them that we have in Missouri are exposed to weathering, and most of them are on sandstone or limestone, and that being very fragile to adverse weather conditions, most of them are fairly young. They're probably between 1,200 and 600, 700, 800 years old, somewhere in that interval.
Jim, does not seem young to me. That seems like these go back to long before we know that much about things in Missouri.
Oh. Well, you know, we have some that have been dated in caves that are 6,000 to 7,000 years old.
Wow.
So caves and protected areas like rock shelters, which, while they are fragile, they sometimes have particularly pictographs that can be dated by taking tiny amounts of the pigment, and we find that some of those are quite old, 6,000 to 7,000 years old. So if they're not exposed to weathering, they can be quite old.
That's impressive. And I do want to clarify something for our listeners before we continue in this. This is the difference between petroglyphs and pictographs. Carol, what separates those two things?
Okay, petroglyphs are, in short, rock carvings. And by carvings, I mean that they were pecked or etched or scraped or scratched into the rock. And pictographs, of course, are paintings or drawings. They can be drawings with pigments or drawings with charcoal, charred botanical material. So there is that distinction. Now, we also have a third group, which is painted petroglyphs. North of the Missouri River, several of the petroglyphs up there have retained pigment. So we know that even though south of the Missouri River, the petroglyphs look just clean rock carvings, north of the Missouri River tells us that they did paint these petroglyphs too.
Well, let's talk about these stories that they're telling. I think this is so interesting. You mentioned there that they have some commonalities. Jim, what story are these telling?
Well, the one that is apparently most common is a Genesis tradition. Now, this is a worldwide thing. People are terribly interested in their origins, how things came to be. Remember the Kipling Just So stories?
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that with symbolism.
And
we've got metaphors, all sorts of strange things. And there is a tendency for people to, you know, tend to try to interpret this. This is human nature. And what we find is that we've got a Genesis story that's common to many groups that were contacted in the late 17th, early 18th century by Europeans, and particularly religious members of these early trading expeditions, mostly our military surveys in the case of the Spanish. But when they contacted the indigenous peoples, sometimes these religious people in their group who were there to convert the indigenous people would record their stories. And that's been a real motherlode of information for us, particularly the Jesuit relations.
So the Jesuits wrote down the stories told by the same people who were creating these pictures, and you can find where the two things intersect?
That's correct. That's correct. And they very carefully recorded these stories. And interestingly, this business about a great spirit, it wasn't something invented by the Jesuits. They were actually talking to an indigenous people that had already the concept of a single powerful force that created everything in the cosmos.
So they were monotheistic in some ways, at least.
Oh, yeah. It was a different type of monotheism, I think. You know, religion reflects society and vice versa. But they had a more of a, their feeling was more of belonging to a large, complex, layered universe where all living things were interrelated.
And Carol, I understand that the idea of this Earthmaker, this was a feminine force. How do we know that?
How do we know that Earthmaker? Well, there is a first woman and a first man. First woman is also known by other indigenous groups by old woman who never dies, old woman, Karn mother, Earth mother. There's many, many different versions of her depending on the group that is telling the oral tradition. How do we know that she's there? Well, she's even in our culture. We talk about Mother Earth, don't we?
Yeah, this is something that goes across different
culture.
Belief systems. Yeah.
That's
fascinating. Now, Jim, I want to put in here, you guys aren't just working on this on your own. You've also worked very closely with Osage scholars and people who are part of this nation. When it comes to working with them to interpret these pictures, what kind of insight do they have?
Well, they're well acquainted. In fact, sometimes they kind of look askance. Didn't you know that? Huh? Didn't you hear about that? And I was amazed at how much culture has survived in that society. And in doing some reading, Mooney, a fellow that was hired by the Bureau of American Ethnography back to turn the into the 20th century, did some serious work trying to figure out how many of these indigenous groups were holding on to their religions, and they found out that the Siouan speakers were very, very good at doing this, and they were quietly holding on to their ancient traditions, and then they have found that this is a very widespread thing, not just amongst the Siouan speakers, but also in the Southwest. They've done a very good job of preserving, same way in Mesoamerica. And that's human nature again. You don't discard that which has served you so well for thousands of years.
And so is this being passed on through an oral tradition, or do they also have some written archives they're drawing on?
Well, it's largely oral traditions up until about the time the languages started to be intentionally suppressed by the federal government. The children were being taken away from their families and placed into schools, sometimes hundreds of miles away from their parents on reservations. And this was a conscious effort on the part of the federal government back at the turn of the century and before to de-Indianize the population, and it's still going on, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they did was to do away with the language. They would actually punish the children that would speak their native language in their schools. And what happened was the kids still listened to their grandparents, did their best job they could. Sometimes the grandparents would try to translate into English for them. And all of this has come down to us. And sadly, with not only indigenous people, the Indian people, it also happened to the very early French. And get rid of the language, get rid of the oral traditions. And happily for our work, the Osages have been very valiantly trying to hold on to both. They have language classes, and that's where we got the big break.
And the big break? What's the big break?
The big break was a man called Charles Pratt, who was a language scholar, an Osage language scholar. He was well-educated, had a baccalaureate degree. His brother, Steve, has a doctorate. And these two brothers were both working hard to preserve language as well as oral tradition. And sadly, Charles died of cancer just a few years back. But he has a memorial over at Cahokia. And he was a big contributor to our foundational work. And it was surprising just how much he did know.
So he was a critical connection for you in understanding these things.
Very definitely.
We're talking today to Jim Duncan. He's the former director of the Missouri State Museum and a former exhibits director with the Missouri Department of Conservation. We're also talking to Carol Diaz-Granados. She's a PhD and a research associate at Washington University's Department of Anthropology. And both Carol and Jim are studying the petroglyphs and pictographs that are throughout Missouri and many times in caves. Carol, I understand a whole lot of these depictions are found in what's called Picture Cave. This is in Warren County in eastern Missouri. What's the historical significance of this site?
I'll let Jim talk about that too, but this cave, which is on private property, and I want to emphasize that, it is on private property and it is heavily gated and protected. And it is, as Professor Jan Schimmick at University of Tennessee calls it, the Lascaux of Missouri. Which some of your listeners, I'm sure, will be familiar with Lascaux.
I'm not. So tell us, what would that mean to be the Lascaux
cave,
of Missouri?
The cave in France that is loaded with images painted on the cave walls. And there are almost 400 images painted on the walls of this picture cave. And they are so detailed, some of them, not all of them, but many of them are so detailed that we can get a really good idea of what they were doing and how they fit, how the images fit with the oral traditions of the Eastern Sioux, the Central Sioux, the Dagean Sioux, which are the Osage, and their other cognate tribes connected to them that all spoke Dagean Sioux.
Jim, I understand you've concluded that these drawings in Picture Cave were made by the same people who were involved with the Cahokia Mounds. How did you make that connection?
That was a connection made with portable artifacts. They had found a cluster of very unusual portable artifacts. They're called maskettes. And you don't put them on your face for Halloween. They're worn on your ears, and they're symbols of your position and clan within not only governmental organization of your nation, but also in the cosmos. These are cosmic symbols. They're incredible. And there's a figure depicted in Picture Cave, beautifully depicted. It's monumental, but it's quite small. And this figure has these ear maskette ornaments on it.
That's a connection there. You must have felt chills realizing that.
I just about fell down when I saw it. I couldn't believe it. And a good friend of mine who knows a lot about the iconography also said, you know, if an archaeologist had been standing behind the artist that created that image, he couldn't have done a better job of telling him what to put on it.
You know, we got an email that feels really on point here. We heard from our listener, Nick, and he writes, I wanted to ask Carol and Jim a question as a new landowner with a pictograph site on my property. What could we do to be a better steward to the archaeological world in Missouri? And what ways can we learn more about the content around Missouri? He says, we're currently reading petroglyphs and pictographs of Missouri. So he's looking for some education. And also, if you have any advice on how he can be a good steward here.
Well, first of all, I think what we'd want to do is confirm that it is an actual one.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, quote, fake, unquote, ones that have been done around Missouri. Well, done all over the world and all over the United States for sure. But we would want to confirm that it's real. And then depending on the pigments, it could be dated, especially the black pigments. The charred botanical material can be dated, radiocarbon dated. And
Carol, just to interject here, how would he go about confirming that it's real? Is there somebody who looks into these things who would go onto a private property for that sort of task?
We've done that.
Well, that's we're going to have to put you in touch with Nick. So you would go onto the property and investigate and see what you could learn about what he has.
Yes, we can do that. And it is, it's not a simple matter depending on where it's located. I mean, if it's like down a steep embankment or something, we'd have to find out exactly, the situation of the cave or shelter that it's in. Usually they're in shelters that are pretty easy to get to.
So if you were able to get to it, you would. In the meantime, anything you'd recommend for people who want to become more educated on this topic? Is there a book or something that's a good that's useful to just a novice?
Well, we do have the original book that was published in 2000 by University of Alabama Press called The Petroglyphs and Pictographs of Missouri, and that's a good place to start. And then in 2004, we published a collection of papers, including a few on Missouri rock art, but it's called The Rock Art of Eastern North America. And I think that would be of interest. And then we do have a beautiful, beautiful full-color volume on Picture Cave published by University of Texas Press in 2015. And anybody looking at that, the pictures in that book, I'm sure they cannot help but be impressed. It's an amazing sight. And then in 2018, we published Transforming the Landscape with Oxbow Press in London. And that talks about a more general look at different sites in the eastern United States and how they reflect the cosmos of the American Indian. So any of those four books, but to start with Petroglyphs and Pictographs of Missouri.
Well, that's great that Nick started there with the right book. We'll make sure to get more information about those books on our website for those who are interested in learning more about this. Our website is stlpublicradio.org. We'll update it this afternoon with a podcast of this conversation and also more materials for people who want to know more. So Carol Diaz-Granados, Research Associate at Washington University Department of Anthropology, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this knowledge.
Thank you very much for having us, Sarah.
And Jim Duncan, a former director of the Missouri State Museum and former exhibits director with the Missouri Department of Conservation, thank you for sharing of your work.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. If you learned something new from today's episode, consider leaving us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the easiest way to help people discover our show. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.